Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, all you monsters out there. Welcome to Post Show Recap's coverage of The Witcher Season 2. We are back after a big premiere to talk not only about Episode 2 on its own, but also as a whole in Season 2 of The Witcher, because Angela Bloom, since last time we got together, we have watched Season 2 of The Witcher!
Hut hut!
Hut hut. Yes, hut hut hike!
No, just
you didn't think they were going to go into a football game?
I didn't.
The Deathless Mother just wanted to play a pickup game.
Yeah, I guess.
It is that time, after all. Winter,
it is.
Both in Kaer Morhen and in our world as well.
Yeah, it is winter, although we have passed the winter solstice. Hooray! The days get longer from here on out.
Exactly. And much a less depressing Witcher fashion, right? Of like, the days just get shorter and the monsters get bigger.
I guess so,
and
yeah.
More tree-like.
Yeah, talk about trees. But yeah, we watched it.
We watched episode 2. We watched all of season 2. But
we did. But again, we're going to focus in a little bit.
Exactly. To remind people of the way that we are doing this, we're doing it for both the bingers and a one-at-a-timers, I guess is the better way to put it.
The one-at-a-timers.
So just the first part of this podcast is just going to be us recapping the episode wholesale, plain Jane, just talking through the episode on its own. And then we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, hopefully all of you who have not watched past episode 2 will have been chased out by then, like a nice little whorehouse running away from Kaer Morhen. And then those of us who have watched the rest of the season can have a little bit of a chat as to what significance episode 2 plays into it overall, maybe some fun things in retrospect, what it set up that we didn't even realize. But what I would say is, overall, this was not the episode I was expecting it to be in many ways.
Yeah, it kind of just hit a lot of things like really quickly. But I enjoyed it.
Oh,
for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, talking about the titular Kaer Morhen, God, that set is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer other sets later in the season, but I'm not a big fan of winter, so
yeah.
It's not really my jam.
I mean, it very much has like that castle black
thing
as well,
sure.
Right? Like wintry, you know, sort of degraded castle in part because of the siege that befell it, and there's just not as many people to do maintenance on it nowadays.
Yeah, not as many witchers, unfortunately. But I do like the, you know, that we have a bit of context from Nightmare of the Wolf as well, so we're kind of familiar with the setting already, which is nice. But yeah, this was cool, kind of seeing it and kind of seeing all the witchers and coming to some sort of home for Geralt.
Yeah, what I realized overall is I was very wrong in my assumption last week that we would have, like, okay, a monster of the week quite literally plot, and then, like, a more long-term plot. It really does seem like The Witcher Season 2 has kind of abandoned that episodic approach for much more long-term storytelling.
Yeah.
And that's not to spoil the rest of the season. I think you
no,
already get a
true.
Feeling from Episode 2 that, like, it's less about, hey, Geralt goes to fight this monster, and more so, hey, here's how it ties into the larger mysteries or arcs of the characters.
Yeah, exactly. I think that it's for sure something that is a little different than the previous season, but the previous season was also a big timeline jumble jamble.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you take the good with the bad. I saw an interesting interview this week, actually, I should say today, the day we're talking, with Lauren Schmidt-Hissarch, who is the showrunner of The Witcher. And she talked a lot about, you know, working through season 2, especially because they did have to stop, I believe, like halfway through for the pandemic. But it's interesting, you know, she spoke about how she felt one of the big balls that she had dropped, one of the big spheres, I should say, is the concept of Ciri.
Yeah.
She basically said, I have to say, in season 1, I don't think that we paid enough attention to Ciri's story, she says in an interview with THR. It's one of my big regrets watching that season, and so we worked really hard this season to make sure that we felt like we were on the path a lot more with Ciri.
Yeah.
Even 2 episodes in, I absolutely feel that.
Yeah, and she has a much more of a fleshed out, like, realistic character, too. Like, she's funny, and she's quippy, and she's, like, a preteen, and I like that. I mean, I think that previously it was kind of like, oh, who's this damsel in distress? Like, more like a kid.
Yeah, it was more like things were being done to her than her doing things.
Well, or having any sort of agency over herself at all. So even her power, you know, it was like kind of just exploding out of her. And in this, it's like she's learning to use it. And you know, I mean, to be said what she can do is who knows.
Yeah. Well, she's standing out, including her eyebrows.
Yeah, we had a big discussion about this. And I read an article. I think we talked about it last episode, how she looked so, so different.
Right, and you had said, why is she wearing makeup? I saw actually a very funny meme of like pictures of her between season one and season two and just the image of Geralt doing her makeup.
Yeah, that was funny. But I think that the big one is her eyebrows, and that like probably is why it stands out. But she has naturally brown eyebrows. They were bleaching them for season one.
Mm-hmm.
And because when you bleach your eyebrows, it can be really harsh on your eyebrows, they can fall out. And so she decided to stop doing that and, you know, keep her regular eyebrows, which I think is fair.
Yeah. And it's also, I don't know, very symbolic that maybe she's doing away with like what Sintra forced upon her. And now
I don't think it was meant. I think it was just
no. Yeah. But I'm trying to bring thematic aspects to a very understandable choice if she wants to keep her eyebrows for the rest of her life.
Well, eyebrows grow back, but still, it's painful. So.
Well, it's an episode that certainly raised some eyebrows. Before we get into it with our recap proper, just going to set up a few things right off the bat in terms of ways that you can reach out to us. We've had people watching the season through since it has aired last week, sending in their thoughts piecemeal. That's great. I've been keeping track of it, and hopefully we'll read it throughout. But if you have thoughts on both the season and the podcast proper that you are listening to, you have a bunch of ways you can reach out to us. You can email mike@postshowrecaps.com. Any feedback you may have, you can always tweet at us, @AngePelagi, @AMikeBloomType, @PostShowRecaps, all Twitter handles. And if you're a patron at the $10 level of Post Show Recaps, then you'll be able to also access our Discord. And at the Discord level, there is a channel for The Witcher specifically, where people have been having a very fun time not only posting about the show, but with some memes that we had spoken about and others. There's one of Ross from Friends, like, having his shirt tucked in, and people said, like, gonna tell my kids this was The Witcher Season 2, so lots of fun stuff to check out. Of course, we appreciate the season is still new, even though it is a week old. Again, Netflix is odd in that regard, and we really appreciate if you check out our Witcher-only podcast feed. We have specifically for The Witcher. If you go to postshowrecaps.com/WitcherPod, you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. And also rate and review us as well. That'd be great. Hang your presumptive medallion on the tree that is your podcatcher of choice. Mm-hmm, and let your voice be heard, and let your presence be remembered.
Presence or presence?
Yeah, we are talking a couple days before Christmas. I actually think this episode's coming out on Christmas, so.
Oh, yay. Well, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Hang a stocking. Trim the tree, but hopefully make sure it's a tree and not a leshy. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, not great. Not great.
All right, well, all that being said, we've set it up. Let's get into episode 2, Kaer Morhen.
Yes.
Nothing to look into with the title, like pretty much self-explanatory.
Yeah, so they go to Kaer Morhen, but there's two separate sections to this episode. There's the stuff at Kaer Morhen with Ciri, with the Leshy, with, you know, all of that, with Vesemir and Garrow and blah, 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 blah. And then there's also the section with Yennefer and Fringilla and Francesca. Yeah. So those are like the two big hits.
Yeah. And so that's the thing as well, is I think we're getting more of a basis as to what exactly is happening. You know, Yennefer is still sort of on the run. She went from being captured by Nilfgaard to being captured by elves, which I'll say I also called a couple weeks ago.
I don't remember that.
Okay. Well,
and I don't listen to our own shows.
I was going to say, I don't listen to you when you're talking to me.
No, that's you. You don't listen to me when I'm talking.
It's not purposeful. Okay?
I know.
It's not done. It's not done intentionally.
Yeah, you just have you can't do two things at once.
Yeah,
it's just not in you.
I have a very tough time. Like, Geralt would, I don't know, he'd just, like, throw me to the wolves and not him, of just, like, being able to focus so much. Speaking of focus, let's talk about the top of the episode here.
Yeah, so the top of the episode,
it's a Yentasy. It's a Yennefer fantasy.
Yeah, the top of the episode was like a little wild to me because it's like very heavy-handed. Yennefer feeling, dreaming that she is married to Geralt, and they have a little baby.
Like, he's the baby daddy. You know?
They're living just the most boring life.
Yeah, like somewhere that's green, right? White picket fence, but medieval version. And
they have a little baba.
And then this is a natural dream thing, right? Where, like, suddenly things accelerate to the next stage immediately. Where, like, they're kissing and he goes, oh, I can't wait to grow old together. And then it cuts to her having an extremely pregnant belly. And then the baby's born.
And then the baby's born. And then the baby's on fire in a red-robed Is she the red robe?
Yeah, so this is the red robe figure. And she's
I can't
also,
remember the colors.
She'll also be noted here, the baby is an elf.
Yes, elf baby.
Yeah, which will come into play considering what is mentioned later in this episode. So a voice whispers during this dream, like, that's a very pretty dream.
Yeah.
Is this the Deathless Mother?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. She's been haunting, so she's selected, as far as I understand it, Yennefer, Francesca, and Frangilla.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading about this, but the Deathless Mother, and we'll learn more. I don't know. Actually, further in the season, learning more about her is kind of up in the air, but she's not a character in the books.
Yes, this is completely made for the show proper.
But it's the...
Because we should note that when it comes to the book, like the book, The Blood of Elves, that they're talking about, it's very much Ciri and Geralt focused.
Yeah.
Yennefer is not in, like, from what Riley, who's a big book reader and prolific feedbacker, has told me, she's not in the first 2/3 of the book.
No, and I think that her relationship with Geralt is sort of, it is more of like a romantic relationship. Like, they become like a partner team. I was going to say the Deathless Mother is based on a folklore, the Yaga Baba.
Oh,
the Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga.
And so this is like, that's what they based it off of. Is that folklore. And you'll see that. I mean, when they go to the hut, that's like the hut that's on legs. Like, it's all part of the...
And that's interesting, again, calling back to the fact that The Witcher is based on, I think, more like Eastern European stuff because of Andrzej Sapkowski.
Yeah, it's Slavic.
Yeah, it's very much like the Baba Yaga is based on that, like, Euro-Russian
And she's a child-eating monster. So,
aren't we all?
She's scary AF. Like, this whole vibe that she gives off with the whispering in Yennefer's ear here and the whispering and all the other, it's too much for me. I hated it.
I'm surprised I haven't made a Yennefer's body reference yet.
Yeah, well, good job. You did it.
Thank you. Check that one off. So we should note here that Yennefer wakes up and it appears that her and Frangilla are both now captured by elves.
Yes.
And she does overhear that Frangilla is also having a bad dream. So I think she's trying to, like, knock off a couple at once, right? Like, oh, they're both sleeping at the same time. I'll haunt their dreams then.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there's something to be said for it happening in threes. That's, like, kind of a consistent folklore.
It is a magic number.
Yes, but it's, like, a consistent folklore thing where there's, like, three witches. Shakespeare does it. Like, it's the three skulls that they're going to see. Like, it's all very, like, folklore-driven, I think.
So the cart stops, and out comes, unhooding himself. He's not a hooded person in the dream, but it is Filivandrel.
Filivandrel.
So people might not remember him, because he only showed up in episode 2, I think, of the first season.
The one where they are in the desert. He's in hiding.
Yes, and this is where, you know, Jaskier writes a song about him, because he is essentially, like, the deposed king of the elves.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he was the head of the elves, and then there was the annihilation of the elven...
Right. What's described...
The genocide.
Is basically, he lost... He attempted, like, a mount against Calanthe, and he lost, and so his people lost trust in him.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's been in hiding.
But that being said, he's still a little close to the throne. We can definitely talk about that. but they take him to a city that, as Yennefer says, you know, there is, like, sort of an obelisk, and it looks similar to Aretusa.
So, yeah, and it's an abandoned elven temple, basically.
Right, that they were built by elves to honor the prophets. What's interesting is that, you know, we get drips and drabs of what happened with this elven genocide. Obviously, we don't see a lot of it. I'm imagining that...
I think that will be a lot of the prequel.
That blood origin is going to go into a lot of that. But, like, this idea that... the elves themselves burned a lot of their own monuments early in the war. And Gage, who is Francesca's brother, I think it is, says, better to be lost to history than humans. And it's like, talk about, you know, dying on your feet rather than living on your knees.
Well, they have a very, like, understandably fair feeling about humans because they've genocided their entire people. So I do think that they continue to have this vibe of better anything than trusting humans.
Right.
And they think, and I mean, this is not to say that mages are technically humans, but they're considered human. Elves don't trust them either.
Yeah.
They don't trust anyone.
And it's interesting because this gets brought up later on in the episode, this idea of the conjunction of spheres that I don't know if this is common mythos, or at least the elves believe that you would assume that, okay, there was the human world, which is this one, and then the elves and the monsters. But no, it seems like the theory is like the elves were on this world and the humans made their way over, not vice versa.
Yeah, so this is the elven world that the humans and the monsters came to.
Yeah, which is really, again, it's not typical, I think, to a lot of fantasy that I think of. Maybe I'm just so human-centric, but
it's
It's
actually, I mean, the elves were the first age of Middle-earth.
I guess that's true.
Come on, Bloom.
I'm so sorry.
You've seen those movies.
Oh, I have.
You have to read the books, though, one day.
I will, one day. Well, when maybe you're old. Maybe in anticipation of the new series coming next year.
Yeah.
It's a really good time for fantasy. So let's talk about Francesca.
Let's talk about Francesca.
How about Franny?
I love this actress. I think she like really kills it. Like she has a vibe about her and I'm into it. But yeah, she's an elf. She's like a sorceress of the elves though.
Yeah,
so she's not like there's like humans and mages, then there's elves and there's sorceresses. So
a sorceress is like an elven mage?
Yeah, I mean, sorcerers, I think it's interchangeable with mage.
Yeah. I mean, she is feisty, mm-hmm. I would say. And mm-hmm. I think it is just this idea of, hey, you know, the political stance of Philivandrel failed. Like, I'm going to lead our people back to get what's ours. What is that thing that she claims? Like, Dawn Mahalura or whatever?
Yeah,
that...
so she talks about this. It's Dalbathana.
Dalbathana, okay.
It's the queen of the elves, basically.
Oh, okay.
And it's like of Dalbathana, which is like, I don't even know how to explain it to you. I'm not even going to try. But it's like an elven, I guess, like monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like, I think you would talk about like a kingdom.
But it's interesting because,
you know, like it's like an area. Dalbathana is like a place.
Mm-hmm. But
so she's the queen of that place.
But it's interesting comparing herself to what we know of the White Flame so far, that she claims like, oh, I'm the leader instead of mm-hmm. you, Philivandrel, because I was visited by, quote, the white-robed one.
Yes.
That she'll talk about later on. She believes it's Ithilene.
Yeah, Ithilene, which is like a prophet from the elven lore.
So I think it's really interesting, again, and this is actually an interesting debate that Yennefer and Fringilla have mm-hmm. throughout, where essentially Yennefer's coming in from basically a very atheist slash agnostic perspective, mm-hmm. right? And Fringilla's like, no, we'll be saved. I have faith. And she's like, no, forget faith. Screw faith. Faith doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I think Francesca's sort of on the same vibe. She, though, is somebody who she doesn't believe in, like, politics or diplomacy. Yeah. She's just like, you gotta just do it.
She's also like, you know, especially when they're brought in, she's like, are they useful for me? No, then kill them.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
She's not about leveraging anything.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot to talk about with her, you know, in regards to...
Is she a book character?
Yes,
okay.
I didn't remember. She's a book character. I think that it's something she's in... I forget which book she's in, but I think, you know, she's like mentioned in Blood of Elves and mm-hmm. then like the other book she's a bigger part of, but she's also in all the games, I think, too.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I'm pretty sure she's in a lot of the games.
I mean, I read it that she was, but I don't play them. So.
Yeah, I was just trying to remember, trying to put those faces to names that are obviously different faces.
There's also something to be said, since we're not really talking about the books, but I can mention this. It's not really a spoiler, but like there's something called the Lodge of Sorceresses and the Brotherhood of Sorcerers that she like creates like the elf version of that.
Oh, interesting. So it's the elven version of the Brotherhood.
Yeah, so in the books, there is a fall of the Brotherhood of Sorcerers,
mm-hmm.
Which I imagine you could see coming.
Yeah.
And she creates...
Yeah, they are like complicated.
She's a founding member of what they call the Lodge of Sorceresses, which is... We won't get into.
Ooh,
but
nice lodge. That sounds nice. Like a fire and some hot chocolate. Aw. Well, they're in need of chocolate. It seems like the elves are not doing so well.
They're not doing great at all.
I wouldn't say they're on the run, but they're very much on the DL right now. Because it turns out that they are in this place. We'll mm-hmm. find out later to, like, basically Francesca feels like she was drawn to find, like, a sign, almost. Right?
Yeah, and so she feels like Yennefer and Fringilla are that sign,
mm-hmm.
to an extent.
To an extent. Initially, she's just like, oh, we'll keep him alive. Like, we'll send him back to Aretuza to be like, don't F with us. But later on, they'll be able to at least talk their way back into her quote-unquote throne room.
Yeah.
Should we go to Kaer Morhen?
We should.
I mean, again... Do you think this was a soundstage set that they built?
Well, so I was reading up about where they filmed all of this, and it was filmed in England, in Yorkshire, so maybe, but I do think a lot of it was soundstage, and if it's snowing so much like that, it's hard to, like, replicate that in the open, in the wild.
I would imagine the insides, at least, are definitely
soundstage. Oh, for sure, and I think the outside is, too.
But I love the small details, everything from, like, there constantly being holes in the stoneware of, like, of course they're not being patched up, so, like, some rooms are cold and some rooms are warm, and you just gotta figure out what they are.
Yeah, and there's also some, like, Easter eggs in there. There's Dagon's armor.
Deglin's
armor on the wall, which I saw.
Yeah, that and was so, when we go through, like, the little, like, reliquary hall of fame later on.
And that's something that people who've seen Nightmare of the Wolf will know, that that's the guy that taught Vesemir.
Yeah, essentially Deglin, the story of Vesemir, which we'll get into very soon, is that Vesemir was essentially, like, a servant boy. Deglin walks in, kills a monster, and Vesemir's like, oh, that's cool, I want to go do that. And he essentially, like, so instead of being, like, sold or recruited or law of surprise, like, Vesemir pursues Deglin.
And he pursues becoming a Witcher, which I think is relevant because that connects him with the way Ciri feels about just finding her own path. You know, she, like, immediately is enamored by these guys.
Now, that being said, Deglin, you know, kind of breaks bad in a way in Nightmare of the Wolf.
He sure does, doesn't he?
Basically, supply and demand were not meeting each other, so he ends up creating sort of, like, hybridized monsters to essentially keep the Witchers in demand.
Which is why later in this episode, when we find out that the Leshy that attacked Eskel is not a normal Leshy, I think that they have some fear that that might be happening again.
Right, because that assumingly came to an end with the fall or the siege on Kaer Morhen, which also, as Geralt points out here, right, like, he says there were only 20 witchers left last he checked, because that cleared out the climax of Nightmare of the Wolf, cleared out a good bevy of the witchers. It essentially was just Vesemir, four children, including Geralt, and then whoever else was, like, happened to not be at Kaer Morhen that day.
Exactly.
The coloring on the show, I absolutely love. I like the fact that it does feel... Season one, maybe the cinematography was a little more just, like, dirty and dingy. Mm-hmm. But here we have, like, the black of Geralt's, you know, hood against the white of Ciri's dress, which I think is just stunning.
Well, and so she's still wearing that dress from Nivellyn's house.
Yeah,
which
that
is
the,
like,
vampire gave to her.
Yeah, and all she has, this is what, Geralt is wearing this, like, cloak and hood, and she's just wearing this, like, thin white dress and just, like, a little fur shawl. Like,
yeah.
She must be freezing her ass off.
Absolutely. Or, I don't know.
Or maybe her magic powers keep her warm.
It's like a hearth inside of her, you know?
Who's to say?
Let's meet some more witchers here. So, again, if you haven't seen Nightmare of the Wolf, you might wonder, how do witchers interact with each other? And it really is, honestly, it's like a fraternity.
Yeah, so I think that this is, like, an introduction to... what we see is, like, a true brotherhood. Like, they, like, Geralt...
A brotherhood.
It's all about
family. Of witchers.
It's all about family this episode. I think that you see a lot of, like, Vesemir's relationship with Geralt, Geralt's relationship with Ciri.
Yeah, what do you
and
think of
all, like,
Vesemir's nickname for Geralt of Wolf?
I like it.
I mean, do you feel bad for anyone else, like, who also has the wolf medallions?
No, he's calling him that because he's, like, a lone wolf, too.
Oh, okay.
Like, and he's the white wolf. You know, he's got that white hair. Not everybody has, like, a weird look like him. but they all have their own little, like, quirks. So we're going to meet Lamb Chop.
Well, Lambert, but yeah, you love his nickname of Lamb Chop.
Love it. And then a bunch of other people who I don't remember.
Lambert and Cohen are the main two. And also,
we'll get to know more later in the season. But,
but no, there's also Eskel, which we'll talk about.
Eskel.
Yeah. But first, you know, as everyone's hugging, you know, Lambert tells a fun story about being hired to kill Amora when it was actually, like, an affair with the farmer's wife.
Yeah, yeah. So Lamb Chop's, like, the class clown.
Yeah, everyone.
I'm calling him that. I'm not calling him Lambert.
He's now Lamb Chop from now on. Apologies to poor Lambert. Yeah. That's what you're known as in this household. And it seems like Ciri's having an okay time.
Yeah, she seems, like, very charmed by them all. Just, like, it's very, you know, she has latched onto Geralt, like, very quickly. He's her dad now, and she's his daughter.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's come home, and he's bringing his daughter home for the first time, and so she feels like this is her family. Which, it's not untrue, but I do think she's very quick to trust.
And what helps is, you know, we talked all last episode with the Nivellyn about how Geralt was very adamant to be like, no, your uncle, who's crazy, who clearly, or grandfather, who clearly wasn't this person at all. Like, you're not famous whatsoever. And we'll find out later in the scene that Ciri just straight up tells Eskel, my name is Cirilla, Princess Cirilla of Cintra. So, like, it's clear that Geralt really trusts in the Witchers and Kaer Morhen, that he's like, I'm going to, you know, she is viably in danger if word gets out here, but I'm fine trusting these people.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what happens at Kaer Morhen is a rave.
Yeah. So we'll talk
a
about
medieval
this.
Rave.
We'll talk about that for a second. Let's talk about Eskel here because this is, from what I'm to understand, one of the major hangups of the episode.
Eskel is a character that is a fan favorite. He's not this broody a-hole that they depict in this.
This guy is a straight-up dick
episode. They're not... Regardless of the fact that he dies, I think that I've read a few articles about the showrunner talked about why he was the one to die because they felt like it was going to be what changes everything for Geralt. Like it was going to be effective, and they knew somebody had to die in the first episode. And they were like, we have all these witchers together. Who is it? It's going to be him. But the issue that a lot of people have is that Eskel is a main character that is attached to a lot of things in the Witcher fandom. So, like, how are they going to do stuff now when he doesn't exist? And also, like, why change the way he is? You know, why not just have him be himself and then, like, be really nice and be really welcoming and then become a leshy, and that would be even worse, you know?
Yeah. Aiden made a comment that I think was really interesting in the Discord. He said, I'm not happy with what they did to Eskel. He was one of the witchers in the series, and a damn deep one at that. He was portrayed a lot more like Lambert should have been, if we're going by the book / games.
Exactly.
So yeah, it seems like...
He was like the fun one.
Yeah, it seems like he was the more lighthearted, maybe like the Merry and Pippin.
Yeah, and so like, that's the first bad thing. And then the second bad thing is that they kill him off. But like, I would take the killing if his character had been like true to the source material.
Just think in general, if they had made the character more redeeming, like...
Then you would care more. Like, that's the whole point.
The intention is to shock and to make it hurt Geralt and hurt us, then I would like to not make him a brooding a-hole.
Yeah, I think everyone agrees with that.
Yeah,
so, but he's like a brother to Geralt, and he dies. So
but he's gonna come shambling, and he's gonna have like his little half up, half down hair that he got from fighting a leshy for 6 hours.
Yeah, his like really bad like stringy hair.
Yeah, but basically he has one of the leshy's hands on his back. Basically, well, he's gonna have something else coming from his back, but like around his shoulder. I should say, he does note here, it walked and talked like a leshy, but it didn't seem normal. They also note here that, like, leshies are very rarely seen in the universe right now.
Yeah,
because they basically, they don't reproduce, and so, like, any who are still left came through a while ago during the conjunction of the spheres.
Yeah, and so they've basically killed them off. Leshies are, like, big characters, I think, in the games.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, and they have crows, and there's a whole thing about them. But, yeah, so I think they were probably trying to do a little nod here, but the thing now is that this is a different kind of leshy. They're examining the hand, and they're like, this looks weird.
Yeah, there are lots of buggies in it.
I don't think that's why they thought it was weird.
Oh, there's so many bugs in here.
Anyway.
But we do get a mention here, right, of like a lore drop on the leshy of like, oh, it stings with its roots. Vesemir says, oh, you kill it by sticking it with fire.
Yeah, and they're like, why didn't you think of that?
And Eskel gives a look like, And then he decides to turn his fury onto Ciri.
Yeah, exactly. Which is another reason people were just like so upset with this. Because in the books, he's somebody who... He's tough on Ciri, but he respects her. And in this, it's like he's being a true dick.
Yeah, it's essentially like the chain of bullying, right? Where like he's being bullied by Vesemir, and so he bullies Ciri.
Exactly.
As we cut to the opening, I love how the logo for this episode is half wolf head, half like tree. To like not only indicate the leshy and what happens to Eskel, but also hint a bit towards the hut in the woods as
hut,
well.
Hut,
hut, hut.
I love the like the thing that they say.
Turn to your back to me, hut hut.
Yeah, it
front.
Sounds so creepy.
Sounds like a version of the electric slide with a house.
Well, now you ruined it.
It's a hit at bar mitzvahs.
Yeah.
So look at Geralt doing his own little Mulan-esque sequence of like hopping across these narrow perches.
Yeah. So the other thing to note about Kaer Morhen, for anyone who hasn't watched the Nightmare of the Wolf or really anything about The Witcher.
Yeah, or
is
check
that,
out the games because Kaer Morhen's a part of that as well.
Well, yeah, but I don't know how much context you get in the games, but it's like they're where they go in the winter when the monsters have like gone to hibernate, basically. Like there's the winter's cold, so there's not
they're
as many.
They're off season.
Yeah, it's their off season. So they are there to like rest and rejuvenate, but also train. And so there's these training courses throughout the property, the estate, if you will. And so this little like section, I think, is like a training thing, and Geralt's just kind of redoing it, like feeling it.
Oh, he's feeling his oats. He's like
he's very much
jumping through,
dragon slaying it.
Oh my god, he's so Coach Wade.
Yeah,
at the moment. And so here we get a little bit of that Vesemir relationship. So let me ask you, because again, we saw some of Vesemir played against by a different character and portrayed in a different way in Nightmare of the Wolf. What do you think of Kim Bodnia's portrayal of, like, older Vesemir?
I think he's great, because I do think that Vesemir is this father figure for the most part in the books to Geralt. I also think he portrays very clearly what happened in Nightmare of the Wolf,
yeah,
in this, like, regret, in this sadness, in this, like, responsibility for all witchers, because basically it was like him and a bunch of kids left over. So,
yep,
like, he's become their dad, and, like, Geralt is his favorite.
Much more than I would say than Deglin became a father to Vesemir, just because there were so many kids around, and, like, Deglin was doing his own thing.
And I think Vesemir going through that whole thing, the sacking of Kaer Morhen and all of that, also put him in a position where he felt, like, responsible for not it happening, but what happened next, whereas, like, Deglin never had that. And so he's in a whole different world.
Yeah, so that's the other thing as well, is that Vesemir has now sort of lived through this tragedy and is now kind of, like, has to keep his guard up a bit. Like, he tells Geralt here, Geralt admits that one of the reasons why he took Ciri to Kaer Morhen is so that basically he could keep her safe while simultaneously figuring out who she is and what she is.
Well, and also help her figure that out, too, because I do think that there is this component of, like, he wants to figure it out, but I think that he also just really wants her to have control. So he initially brings her there for that, and I think by the end of this episode, like, he realizes she needs to learn to do that.
Exactly. It's this idea of, like, being hands-on is, you know, it's a requirement when it comes to teaching and training. You know, you can't just tell her to do things. She has to learn to fend for herself as well, considering how dangerous the world is.
Yeah.
And Vesemir also responds by just warning him, like, you know, I didn't like it when you claimed the child surprise in the first place, because last time we really meddled in the affairs of kingdoms and didn't just, like, do things for a quick buck, this entire place basically got raided. Again, that's the whole thing of the Nightmare of the Wolf, is that there was an involvement with a kingdom, and so that kingdom decided to invade Kaer Morhen and led to everything happening.
Right, and then, like, then you find out about Deglin and his mutants, but it's all sort of, like, catalyzed by the human, like, kingdom.
But I
work.
Agree. Vesemir, I think, does a really cool job of sort of still, you know, having that Deglin quality of kind of, like, the old veteran of, oh, yeah, of course, this is how it is, you know, him going in and telling Eskel about how to kill the Leshy, but still has, like, chemistry, I think, is a good way to say it, which is odd considering what happens to make witchers in the first place.
Science!
Kim Bodnia has really good chemistry with Henry Cavill. Like, I like them just sort of sitting down and, like, hashing
shit out.
And he
has amazing chemistry with Ciri as well, even in this episode when she's, like, kind of spooping on the, you know, the whole debauchery happening.
Art orgy.
I don't think it's an orgy. The other guys are just kind of drinking.
And everyone's,
like,
paired off.
Yeah, and so they're, like, you know, they're having this, like, party that is not suitable for children, and he sees her, like, peeping, and even then he's, like, he's intrigued by her. He's not, like, mad that Geralt brought her. He's, like, you know, a little worried, but not mad.
So Ciri is, meanwhile, going to wander around the halls of Kaer Morhen.
Yeah, she's just making herself at home.
Well, I mean,
truly.
Geralt did tell her to find a room, and here comes freaking Eskel.
Yeah, he's an asshole
here.
We went
from freaking Stregobor to freaking Eskel. Like, he insults her, and then he, like, is super creepy towards her and, like, reaches for his shoulder while he's doing it.
Yeah, he's, like, very predatory here, and I disliked it.
I would imagine, though,
in a big way.
I imagine part of that, though, is, I guess, like, if the Leshy is sort of
worming
its way into his brain.
I think that if they had included a scene of him coming in, being welcomed by his brothers, having a heart-to-heart with Geralt, and then this happening, we would see a stark difference, and we would know that it was the Leshy. So I do think that it is supposed to be the Leshy doing this, but it's not explained well.
Yeah, it's like a form of possession, almost.
Yeah, they just don't explain it.
For lack of a better term, it's taking root in his brain. Meanwhile, Yen and Fringilla are just going to kind of, like, chill and basically talk about what's happening. This is when Fringilla reveals that the dream that she had been having was that she saw someone in a black robe.
Yeah, so we got black, we got red.
Yep, we got black, we got red, and we have white as well. Remember, that's they had overheard Fringilla talk about the white robe figure.
Yeah, and so Yennefer's kind of just, like, hearing all this and is like, suspicious.
Yeah, and so they're going to try to talk their way basically back into talking with Francesca via Philivandrel.
Yeah.
They sort of, like, he gets sort of rebuffed in this moment, right, where Philivandrel's like, hey, you know, there are other camps of elves. We should talk to them. And Francesca's basically like, nah, they're kissing the boots of humans. We don't want to deal with the types of those people.
Yeah, so this relationship between Francesca and Philivandro, I don't know if it's like apparent in this episode, but it's like very much so that she wears the pants, baby.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I had never gotten the context, at least initially, that they were even romantically involved. I thought
yeah,
it was
because
more than
she's
like
so cold to him.
I thought it was initially like just an advisor role.
Yeah, no, I think you get it in this episode only when she says like, no, I'm in charge now, like kind of, but I don't know if it's romantic. You do understand they have a relationship though.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But yeah, it seems like, again, things are looking dire. Basically this idea of like, they're losing land, their caves are even being invaded by monsters. And here comes Francesca continually saying, no, we got to have faith. Or George Michael.
Well, she also just is like,
what has been need not always be.
Yeah. She's like, we're just going to get shit done. We're going to take everything back.
Yeah.
Take it back, baby. To the streets.
Exactly. Thank you. Was it the Doobie Brothers, I think?
I don't know.
Well, Yen is going to try to smoke up with Philivandro here.
I'm sorry, Yenna or Yen?
Yen. Oh, yeah. Well that's a note for the spoiler section.
Sorry.
So basically, she tries to butter up Philivandro when he's in a bad mood, right? Being like, oh, yeah. Are you the guy that was in all those cool songs? The really cool guy, Philivandro?
Yeah, because I guess Yennefer knows about those, but...
Yeah, because I'm assuming these are... Yeah.
He probably just, like... It. Yeah, well, they were, like, climbing that mountain. He was probably just, like, singing their ear off.
I thought it was an interesting pitch. Like, initially, they come in from two different angles, where she's doing that, and Frangilla's like, well, you know, the white flame will punish those who punished you, and Philivandro just says, thieving a thief just makes you the latest thief.
Yeah, he's great. I actually really like this actor, too, because you do kind of have this idea of what Philivandro was and what he is now, and I think this guy represents, like, exactly what he is now.
Yeah,
you know, so, like, he's like an elf king deposed.
Yeah, and so he is a little, like... As much as he tries to be
supportive
and optimistic about this idea of like, oh, let's work with some others. You know, for example, when Frangilla makes this offer with Nilfgaard, Philivandro responds of like, oh, yeah. And they're just going to like hand it back to us after we take over Sintra.
Yeah,
together.
He's a bitter bee. He also just is really pessimistic because like he's been through the ringer here.
Yeah, he got thrown on his dump.
And all his people got murdered. So I think that he's just kind of like, why bother?
Yeah. So we should note here also, we get a name invoked, Zintria, which is the original elven name of
Sintra.
I mean, it's to use sort of an allegory, right? It's like a Native American land that was conquered by colonists.
Yup. We're in it, right? We're in it. We live there.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
But Frangilla eventually gets onto the ass-kissing,
basically
saying, like, oh, you're that one. We get a little bit of fun faith back and forth here. Yennefer says, faith is a simple medicine for desperate souls. And, you know, Frangilla's like, no, faith's great. Sustains us in our dark times.
Yeah. I think that this is, like, a pretty consistent for Yennefer. She just, like, does not vibe with anything religious.
Yeah, and she can't even pretend say that she has faith. But basically, they're able to convince him, or at least pique his interest of, hey, we had dreams about rogue figures too. You need us as much as we need you.
Yeah, so like magic, and they like jazz hands.
But there's also a fun moment where like they say, the elves say they found something, and Philivandro gives a look at them and says, close, very close. Now, eventually he will let Francesca know, but I like this moment of him being like, you almost got me there.
Yeah.
I almost unchained you.
Yeah, exactly. So he turns around, and I guess, like, this is where they find the shrine of sorts.
They're going to go to the shrine later, but, yeah, they seem to have found, like, a chamber within the temple.
That's what they were calling him away to see.
Yeah. So let's go to CSI Kaer Morhen here.
Exactly.
Because Geralt breaks down the Leshy Hand.
And I love this, like, laboratory, which will become, like, a main set in the season, but I do think it, like, is very much so what we saw in Nightmare of the Wolf. It's, like, that very... Frankenstein's lair.
It really is. Like, no windows.
But, like, it's science.
Weird beakers.
Yeah, it's science meets magic meets, like, medieval times. You know, like, it's got that weird vibe of, like, old-timey science, which I love.
So, interesting conversation.
Like, apothecaries.
Ooh, yeah, exactly. Or, like,
potions.
Alchemy.
Alchemy. That was what I was thinking. Alchemy.
But apothecaries, too, of, like, doing weird science.
Yeah, like, let's mush some herbs up, and here you go.
Exactly. So, really interesting conversation here between Ciri and Geralt, where Ciri's sort of, like, says, I'm bored.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this what we're going to do? We're going to study monsters. We're going to make elixirs. Can we train? He's like, no, it's too dangerous.
Yeah, so he's being a helicopter dad.
Yeah, or at least not wanting to put her in too much danger.
Oh, he doesn't see her as somebody. I don't think he sees her as capable of being like a witcher because he sees her as like a princess.
Well, the issue is that he talked about this at the end of the last episode, right? This idea of fear being a disease and the only way to stave off the disease is to conquer it.
Yeah.
He feels, and she sort of confirms that, like, basically, she wants to become a witcher and learn magic to get revenge on Kahir, man in the black winged helmet.
And he's like, we don't do this for revenge.
She can kill now because she hates now, to quote Maria from West Side Story.
Maria.
And Sarilla.
Sarilla.
And Geralt points out, we don't kill out of fear, we kill to save lives.
Yeah, and that's the whole witcher mantra. That's why they were created. And I think there are witchers who are not, you know, even in Nightmare of the Wolf, we see Vesemir as somebody who's like a true witcher.
Yeah.
You know, there is no...
He's very much in like the Lambert category of like, yeah, I'm going to like kick back, luxuriate.
I'll kill monsters,
tub.
I'll get coins, I'll have
get
sex,
laid, yeah.
I'll take baths and just live my life like this. But I think with Geralt, it means more. And I think that's because of what he went through with like going through the turmoil of Kaer Morhen being sacked, having Vesemir being a true orphan, you know, being sold. And I think he is somebody who really, really subscribes to witchers are here to kill monsters. We're not here to deal in anything else.
Yeah.
And the reason we kill monsters is to protect humanity.
Yeah. So
that's that.
This is when the partay happens. Basically, it's like Eskel went down to the town, right? And like,
yeah, he brought back some prostitutes.
Brought back some prostitutes. We should note here a little bit of a cameo. I saw the time, but I confirmed this via IMDb. So this prostitute that Geralt is talking to, when she's like, don't you remember?
It's a question
to us, because if you remember, I actually think it might be in episode 2 or episode 3 of season
1. Yeah, it's
one.
The one that he's like in the motel with.
Yeah, that he like gives a monologue to after they had sex.
Yeah.
It's that same one.
Oh,
her name is Danica, I want to say, something like that.
That's nice. Extra work for her.
Yeah, I'm glad they brought that actress back. And it's a really interesting exchange as well, where she's like, oh, you have a daughter. He's like, not my daughter. And then when she sort of teases, oh, I can bring her into the family business, he's like, no. And she's like, oh, okay, and you say you're not a father.
Yeah, because he's very protective. But also, like, somebody says that even if it was just a girl I was watching for the weekend, I would not say, yeah, sure, make her a prostitute.
It's the world's profession, okay?
Yeah, but I wouldn't, like, as a dad, I just think that there's, like, somebody who's protecting somebody else doesn't, you know, sex work is valid, it's real, it's important, blah, blah, blah. She's, like, 12.
Yeah, that's actually probably the main point. Like, yeah, she is a very young girl.
Yeah, she's like 12 years old. If she turns 18 and she decides she wants to do that for her life, go for it.
And we see Eskel is getting more ornery and hornery.
Truly.
As he's like, you know, getting a bit aggressive. Geralt basically confronts him for bringing people in. Again, he's very concerned because he's afraid basically anyone who's in outside of the Witcher circle might get to Ciri and essentially blow up the whole thing. And Eskel just punches him.
Yeah, he's just like, he's aggro at this point. And I think that that's, you know, kind of supposed to show that he's becoming more of a monster.
Yeah, he's just become. And you would think initially that they said like, oh, he had too much to drink. But I think it's more so that monstrous personality is taking over.
Exactly.
So let's go inside this little temple here.
Must be
a Tomb Raider.
This, like, little... Yeah, a Tomb Raider is, like, a very good way to describe it. Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom vibe. But, yeah, they go in and there's this shrine with three heads.
The Shrine of the Silver Monkey.
Not that.
No, but there are three heads. One, it looks like one is black, one is white,
it
one
is
red.
Yeah, one is black, one's right, white, and red. Or, like, faded, I should say. And so they're, like, they're very much so, like, taken aback. Because there's three of them. There's three skulls.
Three colors. We hear a bit about the other dreams. Francesca says that apparently she's very dark, like navigating a maze of dead elven corpses.
Yeah.
And basically Ithilien guides her through it and like sees the sunrise and a new elven kingdom. And of course, Fringilla's dreaming about the friggin' white flame.
Yeah, which is just like, get over it.
I mean, again, it's a cult, so like it's understandable how this happens.
Yeah, so she's like, I guess that it appears to her in the form of Emir, and she is, power is what she's promised, basically, by this character.
So they look at this little, like, inscription, right, and it talks about, behold the mother of forests, the deathless mother, nesting in dreams. Fringilla tells a story, which we're going to end up seeing. The scariest stories are the most true ones. A hut with no windows that's perched on basilisk legs that would lure children into be eaten. It's very much the typical haunted house story.
Yeah, so that is the Baba Yaga. I always say it backwards.
Yaga Baba.
The Yaga Baba. But it's basically a hut with no windows on chicken legs, and it lures children to their deaths. Mm-hmm. That's it.
But Francesca's like, oh no, this is one of the old gods.
Yeah, and so she believes this is like Ithilien. She believes that this is their path to get to her, to get their prophecy.
Yeah, this is the sign that she needed to save Elfkind.
Yeah, and so they find this little like inscription, which is like the what they're supposed to say to get to where they're supposed to go.
And all of a sudden, stone moves and a staircase opens up, and we hear a voice called, "Turn back to your forest."
Yeah.
Which I think,
turn your back to the forest.
I thought it was just turn back to your forest.
No, it's turn your back to the forest.
And then that's the whole, that's part of the chant that they do.
Yes, exactly. And so they go down and they have an experience.
And they're going down swinging. We will talk about that experience because The Witcher is just amping it up, in my opinion, in just trippy sequences.
Yeah, I fucking hate this bitch.
Between the vampire and now like this dream.
Yeah, but creepy first, women is their vibe this season.
But first, let's go to the Witcher Hall of Fame.
Yes.
We spoke about this a bit before. This is the Vesemir
museum.
Yeah, where Vesemir shows off Clef, who is one of the first Witchers. Mm-hmm. I don't know much information about Blood Origin. I wonder if we're going to see Clef.
Maybe. I don't know. Honestly, I've only seen the teaser, so.
Yeah, apparently he's, which we should also mention, if you have finished this season, the post-credit scene for season 2 of The Witcher is like a 45-second teaser of the
And
Witcher
I would
Blood
say,
Origin.
Even if you haven't seen it, you could watch the teaser and nothing would be spoiled because it's just very vague.
it's just badass Elven Michelle Yeoh for 45 seconds.
Truly, that's it.
Which is very fun.
And a guy
but
without
it's
ears.
Because we don't know much about the first Witchers, but this guy named Clef, apparently he died to a demon, which was one of the first monsters, so they did not get as sophisticated and diverse as they did nowadays. They were just straight up demons.
Well, maybe they just called it that too, and then they, as they discovered them, they were like, okay, let's name these assholes.
Well, then the also thing is that it's a demon that like used the knife that's displayed to kill him, and some still say she calls to people who cross her woods.
Mother of Darkness, dream bitch. What's her name?
Deathless Mother.
The Mother of Darkness.
The dream bitch. Oh, that was my favorite board game to play when I was a kid. Dream bitch. Where you picked up the phone, she's like, turn your back, hut hut. Oh, I got the death bitch.
Leave me alone. You're a dead bitch.
So essentially, like, you know, Vesemir is trying to push Ciri to reveal who she's being protected from. Because, again, Geralt doesn't even know that either.
No, and, like, I think that Vesemir, while he trusts Geralt, thinks that Geralt knows more about Ciri than he's letting on. Which isn't untrue, but at the same time, nobody... Ciri doesn't know.
Yeah, for Geralt, Vesemir is on a need-to-know basis.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also, at the same time, there isn't much he knows that he would need to share.
Because he feels like she's being a bit insolent and like not opening up to him about the experiences that she has had so far
with
her
magic. Well, she doesn't know him, though.
Yeah, I don't know you.
You're my new
daddy.
We met
2 days ago. You're not my dad.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Eskel's getting it on. And so is this room, this is different than the lab, though, right?
It looked really similar. I think it's...
Because I know there's a lab and I know there's a bestiary as well, or at least there used to be.
I couldn't tell if this was one or the other. Who knows?
Who knows? But basically,
A bestiary is also like a tome. Like, it's like a
right,
book.
But I remember in Nightmare of the Wolf, like, that is where
they identified
all the monsters. And
that's where
what
they had
do.
Them in jars.
Yeah, you're supposed to learn, like, what these monsters are.
I think it's
are.
The same. It might be the same as the lab.
You think so?
Or there's, like, portions of a lab. One is, like, it's like the autopsy room is the bestiary.
We put up a little divider wall sometimes when we need to separate them, but it's the combination lab and bestiary.
I think a bestiary is what, in our world, we would think of, like, as a morgue, like an autopsy place where they, like, dissect and figure out what these things are.
It's like a biology lab, you know?
So I do think it's one and the same, but it all happens there, and it goes down. Shit goes down.
Specifically, it comes out. Specifically, we see, like...
He looked wild. Yeah, like, so the CGI here was, like, disgusting.
And I would imagine some practical as well, because we sort of see he's, like, scaled, or if you will, barked his shoulder, and we see a little vine creep its way out of the hole in his shoulder.
While he's making out with some bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the dark bitch.
So, meanwhile, we're walking in the woods. We're walking in the woods. Fringilla basically talks about how she gives a little bit of her backstory.
Yeah.
That when she was sent to Nilfgaard, it was not all roses.
No, she had to work her way up.
Initially, the usurper had sent all of the mages into a prison called the Playhouse. That sounds dark AF.
Well, so, I mean, this is... Emir is coming back to take Nilfgaard from the usurper who took it from the rightful king.
Yeah, and so again, that's why everyone, like, if you're wondering, like, why are people following this white flame guy? It's like, because he was essentially the Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah, he came and he saved them and rescued them all.
Yeah, exactly. And so here is the hut. Turn your back to the forest. Hut, hut, turn your front to me. Hut, hut.
Yeah,
and
which
hut,
is
hut,
like...
turns around.
Yeah, it turns around and it starts glowing.
It very much reminds me of, like, it's a literal cabin in the woods, right?
It is, yeah. I also love the coloring here in the in the cinematography. It's, like, really creepy and beautiful at the same time and just, like, really, my vibe.
Specifically the idea of this, like... sort of dingy cabin with a bright light behind it through the windows. And, like, as it comes around, the light obscures everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was a really cool cut.
It was well done.
So this is when Vesemir is going to tell Geralt basically, like, you know, listen, kids will be kids. Like, sometimes they're, like, insolent little shits. And Geralt sort of reveals a bit of his own vulnerability. He says, I was in a cell below Sintra. Basically, like, what I heard happening there... was what I remembered hearing when I was in the basement during Kaer Morhen falling.
Yeah, it was like PTSD experience for him.
Yeah, and I think it also reminds him of just like the cruelty that can happen. And I think much like Ciri was sort of like an externality of that.
Yeah.
He doesn't want her to be as effed up as he was from that experience.
Exactly. So he's like, and I think also he's a new daddy.
Yeah.
You know how that is.
And that's the thing as well, is that, you know, this idea of like not being ready. He compares himself to Vesemir, where Vesemir's like, well, you weren't ready. He's like, well, to be fair, you weren't either, right?
Yeah,
you were Theo James taking care of a bunch of orphans, but you didn't anyway.
Yeah.
And that's what parenthood is.
Exactly. And I think also he had him as an example, whereas Vesemir didn't even have that. So.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't even have, like, he left his father behind to go after the Witchers. So, but all this is interrupted by... The medallions are vibrating.
Yes,
the
monsters
are
here.
Tingling.
So he has fully turned into a monster now because Eskil, because the medallions are shaking.
Yeah, and we should also mention here, I love the set decoration for, like, this main hall.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's a lot more full, but, like, the fact that there are only a few of them just shows how few of them they are. But obviously the big to-do is the giant ass tree where they sort of serves as a monument. That's where they hang the medallions of all the fallen witchers.
Yeah, there's a lot of medallions on that tree.
Yeah, a lot of medallions of power. And so immediately the witchers, like, sober up and start jumping into action.
Exactly.
Right?
Because there is gonna be a tree man.
Yeah, so they have to go, ha ha! They have to hide the horrors. And it's I really like the sound design where, like, it's pretty disquieting as you just see witchers walk through Kaer Morhen trying to figure out what the source of the disturbance is. Because, again, it's not like...
It's not 100% clear to anyone except for us that Eskil is turning into a leshy.
And it's also, like, it's not like a dowsing rod where it's like, oh, it's right here. Like, they feel a presence, but they have to find it.
And I think, again, they didn't give us enough of Geralt being suspicious that something's wrong with Eskil. They kind of made it seem like it was status quo, that he was being
more
an asshole.
That Eskil was being just, like, belligerent.
Yeah, and apparently leshies, this is not typical for them to infect and turn.
Yeah. No, again, which is why they said they don't reproduce. Otherwise, like, if there was indeed a problem with infection, this would have been a much worse problem overall.
Yes, exactly. So then we kind of dive into it with them.
All right. Well, before that, let's get to the dream, because this is the entire dream sequence.
Oh, the dream.
The dream is, I think
it's
really
scary. It was scary. I didn't like it.
It was really creepy, but from that perspective, it was really well done.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool how... essentially, we cut between one person. I mean, I guess good on, you know, the deathless mother for being able to multitask.
Deathless bitch.
Death bitch. Being able to have essentially three different conversations at the same time.
Yeah, and so her conversation, I guess, with Francesca first is this...
Is Ithilien, who looks like... I don't know, she looks kind of like...
Like Galadriel from
Like, yeah, if Galadriel, I don't, went to the beach, that makes you old.
Yeah, but, like, very much that vibe, though, you know, like a... Like a
doused in white,
and the idea of in Wiccan religion is the idea of the crone, which is like a revered older like witch, and I think that that's the vibe there. And she's basically telling her that the world will be covered in ice and reborn.
Yeah, she basically says, like, there will be a frost that will kill the world, and then the sun will come out, and that's when elf time will truly come. But essentially what this woman does is, and Volithmir is, like, her true name, is that she gives them essentially a deal. Right?
Yeah.
She tempts them of, like, you know...
Like, if you want this to happen... This has to happen.
Exactly. And so let's start with Francesca first. Mm-hmm. But Francesca's probably the easiest. And I would say of the three, Francesca is the one that almost buys in it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Because she really does believe it's Ithilien. And it's only at one point where she says, okay, maybe you're not Ithilien. But like from the very beginning, she's like, oh, it's you.
Well, and Ithilien is for her this like prophetic thing and this like really revered person. And she's been having dreams about her. So she believes that this is the moment her dreams have been leading to.
Yeah. And so Ithilien will then, much like she did with Yennefer, give her old poppin' pregnant belly and basically offer the first pure blood elf child in generations.
Well, it's not that it's she's already pregnant, but she says she'll offer her it to live.
Because
I think up until now, she probably would have had a stillborn or like a
miscarriage. And that also puts pressure, I think, on elven generations is they have only been able to procreate
crossbreed
with humans essentially to survive. That's what Yennefer is, a quarter elf. Her father is a half elf.
Yeah, and so this would be the first full elf in like a century or whatever.
But
so,
in order for her child to live, she must live among men in Zintria.
Yeah, exactly. So this is like, okay, great. That's no problem. She says, deal. Like, she doesn't even think about it.
She's not even flipped, like, yes, Mr. Banker, I'm taking the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sort of go into the middle of the spectrum here for me, which is Fringilla.
Yes.
Who I think shows a lot of reservation at first when she sees
Amir. Well, yeah, she's not sure.
Well, she initially just flat out says, you're not Amir. You're not the White Flame.
Well, because she knows what the White Flame looks like. So she's like, this is just a guy, a cloaked figure.
Yeah. And
you know?
So, and initially he tries to, like, neg her almost, right? Being like, are you that's a children's tale. Are you a child, Fringilla? Did I save you from the playhouse to be a child?
Yeah, exactly.
And so he says, well, listen, I may not be Amir, but I can tell you what he can't. The path to truth strength lies not in humble faith, but in believing in oneself and seizing one's destiny. And basically, he's saying, like, what do you want? And she admits, like...
Power.
Power, yeah. Because she had essentially been part of this Nilfgaardian force, but she had kind of been, like, under the thumb of Cahir.
Yes. And so I think that she wants her turn in the sun, basically.
She wants to rebuild her forces, strengthen their numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And Amir says, you want salvation, then you're bringing back the wrong elf. So it's indeed this, like, big brain plan from the Deathless Mother to have these two come together. I think maybe my favorite part of all this, though, as we're talking about this, is... It obviously keeps cutting between the three, but at certain points, two different characters will say the same thing at the same time, which I really love. Like, for example...
Yeah, it's really well done.
Like, when Amir says, believing in oneself and seizing one's destiny, Ithilien says that at the same time.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that they're using the exact same argument on two different people.
Well, it's probably all happening simultaneously, too, which is wild.
Like, Amir and Ithilien both say, a large and unpredictable land, even with numbers, you'd be lost. You need friends. Like, again, it's really advocating driving the two of them together. And so, even though, you know, Fringilla initially is not into it, the idea of whoever this is presenting her with this idea of this position of power that she's wanted...
She agrees with it. She's like, I want to be in power.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know you're not the White Flame.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about Yennefer.
Yeah.
So, who is this?
Yeah, so I think this, for her, is just, like, some sort of, like, somebody who will give her back her power. I don't think it's anyone...
So you don't think it's, like, I wouldn't say it's young Yennefer, because we know that young Yennefer had a hunchback and some deformities.
Yeah, maybe it is, like, her... Like, what she thinks of as, like, her former self or so. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe
definitely...
it is supposed to... Oh, I know exactly who this is. I
thank you, Ken Jeong.
Yeah. I know exactly who this is. This is the girl who tormented and taunted her in the stables when she was a young... Yes. I thought of that while we were watching it, and then I looked it up, and I think it is that.
Okay, yeah. So if you remember from Yennefer's origin story.
The one where she was, like, called her Piglet and was, like, you know.
Yeah, because she lived in the stables, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense here, where essentially this girl torments Yennefer. She,
like
strokes,
truly teases
her. She strokes the cuts that she made on her wrist the first day she was in Aretuza, basically saying, like, oh, I do wonder how you were alive so long. Oh, but you know, it was for power.
Yeah.
You're desperate for power.
Exactly.
Despite how much you try to play hard to get. And essentially what young Yennefer, but the bully. What's her name from Little House on the Prairie? Right?
Yeah,
Melissa
exactly.
Gilbert's character, like,
exactly.
She essentially tells her, drops the bomb here of, hey, did you ever think about portaling yourself out of here? No, you didn't, because you know what I know. You've lost your magic.
Yeah, and this is where Yennefer, like, previous to now, she's kind of been hoping it'll just come back.
She's felt tired, and she feel like maybe it was because of the chains.
She was drained, or, you know, like, something was, like, leading her to believe, like, it's not that serious.
Yeah, and so...
But it is!
She brings her back, like, really demeans her by bringing back the whole rock and feather thing. The very first thing they did in Aretusa, she invokes that Piglet nickname, putting her back in, like, one of the lowest moments of her life, and she can't do it.
Yeah, she can't do it. So she basically says, you don't have your power.
And so her
deal... I will give you your power.
Yeah, her deal is, like, I'll do it. And, you know, Yennefer attempts to lift the rock. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And this is when Volathmir takes her true form. Kind of looks like who played Billy Crystal's wife in The Princess Bride?
Yeah.
Competent.
Not Lily Tomlin. What's her name?
It's Carol Kane.
Yeah, Carol Kane. But I think that the big thing about Yennefer to note here is, like, she is stubborn AF.
Yep.
She's always been stubborn. She will continue to be stubborn. And she doesn't even ask at this point what she wants in exchange. She just says no. She's like, no,
but,
no.
You know, this woman doesn't take no for an answer.
Yeah.
She basically says, like, essentially, you'll come crawling back. Like, I want your desperation to be crisp, and it will. And don't worry, I'll always be here if you need me.
Well, because she feeds on that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But this is the big reveal. You know, farewell chaos. What will she live for now?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a big question, considering that a lot of the latter half of season one in particular was Yennefer using her power to sort of get what she wanted. When she doesn't have that power,
what is she going to do?
Is she that girl back in the stables?
Yeah, exactly. Who's to say?
Yeah. So, meanwhile, let's go back after, again, I think it was a little confusing at first. I think the second time that I watched it became a lot clearer and I became a lot more impressed by it. But basically, all you need to know, this woman makes three separate deals with these three separate women. Two take it, one doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. And so the two that take it are going to end up working together. Because they were kind of pushed into doing that.
Yeah, they were there. Eventually, an alliance was broker. She was the matchmaker.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how it goes.
So
basically, that's it.
Let's go back to Kaer Morhen. Geralt's going to try to take on Eskeleshi. I'll call him Leshki, maybe.
Leshki.
Because they're
Leshki.
Because there is a point where,
I don't know what that was.
I don't know what, maybe that does the dream bitch voice.
Yeah.
But Geralt, like, sees the Leshki and, like, sees Eskel's face in it, and there is, like, one hot second where Eskel acknowledges his presence, but then still attacks.
Exactly. So I think that he's too far gone at this point.
Yeah, well, this is where he admits, though, right? He says, like, I knew something was wrong. I came back to Kaer Morhen because I thought I could fight it. I thought you could fix me. I don't know if he's referring to Geralt specifically or, like, the royal you, as in
I
the
think
Witchers.
The royal you. I don't think he... I mean, maybe Geralt, but we weren't ever...
Again, that's the thing. Like, if we knew about this relationship...
If we had any understanding of their relationship, maybe we would know.
So, before Eskel can make the killing blow, because he's kind of restrained Geralt with vines here, Vesemir hand axe throw.
Yes.
And it becomes a two-on-one fight.
Yeah.
And
tough stuff.
And also the whores run out. They're like, screw this, screw following directions, we gotta get out of here. So, basically, Geralt and Vesemir team up to try to, like, restrain, you know, Eskel.
Yeah.
But
they're trying to save him.
Yeah,
I don't think they
really
know how, but
yeah,
they're trying to.
There's something inside of you there, but it's too far gone. Eskel is choking the life out of Vesemir, and Geralt lights up his freaking sword.
Yeah,
he uses one of the signs. I wouldn't say, like, this is not a Beric Dondarrion, like, sword lights on fire. He's just heating up the metal.
Yes, he's heating up the metal, because this is, like, one of the five main signs that they use.
It's so cool.
No, it was amazing. And it was just, like, exactly what Vesemir had said in the beginning, which was, like, this is what you do to kill a Leshy.
Fire through the heart. And it's as much as it pained Geralt to do it, he had to go through with it. Like,
it was
either Vesemir or Eskel at the end of the day. And so Vesemir laments that. He takes Eskel's medal. He says, yeah, you did what you had to do.
Yeah, and he's sad about it. And I think even Geralt is, like, you know, disappointed, because I do think that he was hoping that it would turn out another way. So you know, it's a bummer all around.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we'll sort of yada yada through this. You know, Yennefer just wakes up in the middle of the woods. I don't know if someone carried her there or the house tossed her.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Well, I think the house, like, you know, said bye to all of them.
Yeah, and obviously is capable of magic that it, like, transported her into the middle of the woods. And this is where Fringilla, who walks free without chains now, just basically fills her in of, yeah, we're going to Syndra now. You know, Yennefer's
come
like,
along.
Well, Yennefer's like, I can't believe you took that deal. And Rachel's like, nah, I mean, my faith got me this far. It'll probably get me further. And she says, hey, you know what? That witch isn't so bad because, if she was, why are you alive right now?
Okay, I guess. Like, yeah. Fringilla is all about just, like, really wanting to believe that everything
is... She's the Fox Mulder of the show.
She is. She wants to believe. She really feels like everything is going to work out. And this was just, like, another step on the path. You know, like, that's always her vibe. Is like, okay, let's just see the next step. Let's get to the next way. And we're going to be fine.
Yep. And so they leave Yennefer behind, which is crazy. She goes from a prisoner of war one episode ago to now, like...
being free.
Adamantly being left behind.
Yeah.
That, like, we don't need to take you to Syndra anymore.
Yeah. Well, they don't.
you're not important. I mean, it's another sign that she's not important, right?
Well, it's another sign she's not important, and I don't even know if she had taken the deal if she would have been part of their little, like, crew anyway, because it didn't seem like what the Deathless Mother was offering her had much to do with what they're doing in Syndra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the whole, like, Elven, Nilfgaard, whatever, coalition.
So Geralt finds Ciri, who finally followed instructions and just waited. Despite the horrors leaving, she stayed behind in her room. And really interesting exchange. She asks him, you know, are we safe now? He doesn't answer.
Yeah.
He just asks, are you okay? So it's become abundantly clear to him that he realized that even in the safest of places, they are not
safe. They're not
safe.
Well, and I also think, I mean, what would attack them here in Eskul is not what is necessarily coming after her proper, but
right.
it's still...
not, it's not, you know, Nilfgaard, but...
No, but it's still bad.
No. In fact, it might even be worse because...
Because he brought her here to keep her safe, and it was like, oh, the thing that isn't even coming after you came after you.
Yeah, but at least, like, you know, with monsters, like, Geralt knows monsters, he knows men, he can do that. That's what he said before, right? Like, I can,
like,
defend
this
her.
Is...
That's what he talked about with Nivellyn. This is beginning to show that what he knows now has limits.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a little scary. And so now we get, like, a little bit of a monologue here as the others mourn Eskul. They, like, put down their weapons. Vesemir's slopping grog all over the floor. I don't know who has to clean that up.
I think they're celebrating. Nobody. It's a groggy floor.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of, like, a Viking funeral, right, where they hang Eskul's medallion on the tree. But Geralt has such a great speech here where he talks about, you know, when Vesemir first brought me to Kaer Morhen, he said the world outside was a dangerous place, but times are changing, even here. Nowhere safe now. You can't run from the world, you can't hide it, but you can find power and purpose, a chance to survive the horror. This continent is meant for no one. All you have to do, Ciri, is keep your sword close and keep moving. And he gives her a sword.
He gives her a sword. So he's basically come to terms with the fact that he can't protect her. Always, she's gonna need to learn to protect herself.
Yeah, and it's
which
awesome
is a big
thing.
Deal because I think up until now he's been very protective of her.
He's
and
been
like,
very much. I mean, Eskul made the reference before, but I think it makes sense. Like, oh, you know, if I ever found a princess, I would never want to play knight, and that's kind of what Geralt's been doing up to this point.
Yeah, because he feels like, what else is he supposed to do? You know, like, what else has he been put here to do?
But he doesn't need a princess. He needs a partner.
He needs a partner. Well, and he think, I don't even know if he needs a partner, but he needs her to be able to fend for herself because, like, there are going to be times, and he's anticipating this, where he can't save her because of who she is and what her power basically means for the world and everything.
So meanwhile, we see Yennefer, you know, running through
it's
the rain dramatically. She's attempting to conjure a portal.
Oh, yeah. This was really sad, actually. I was really bummed for her.
Anya Chalotra does an amazing job here where she just sinks to her knees and just, like,
screams.
Wails.
Well, because this has been her go-to, and it's very much like Ciri.
Yeah,
she's screaming.
Yeah, and it's also very much this, like,
it's Ciri, rage.
It's like a primal thing. And also, again, this idea that as much as I'm sure there was something in the back of her head that's like, that girl was lying.
Yeah, if I try hard enough, I will be able to defeat this, basically.
Because her entire life, like, when she found out that she was magic, that's been her MO. It's like, I can do it because I'm magic. And now, you know, Geralt talks about you can find power and purpose. What is purpose without power?
Yeah, not much.
It's a really interesting question. And Geralt gives Ciri a little wooden practice sword. And there's this really just...
I love her little sword. It's
But there's just this really awesome sequence where, like, right after that speech, he just jumps into training. He just starts going through sword motions.
He's like, this is what we're going to do
now. And she wordlessly takes off her cloak and follows. And it honestly, like, took my breath away the way that the episode ended. Just because it was, like, so simple... So effective. It's an amazing transition.
And the music was really good, too.
And then the shot, it pans out, right, from the two of them, one single shot, to the external of Kaer Morhen. It's just so gorgeous.
It was really well done. And I do think that it's a good signal as to where they're going to go, where the show is going to go, and also where Ciri's going to go.
Well, so that being said, if you do not know where Ciri goes or any of the answer to all
those
questions...
Or if you just want to, like, hang out and,
we're going to talk about it. A quick commercial break. When we come back, full spoiler warnings ahead, we are going to be talking about Episode 2 now in the context of having seen the entire season.
So, bye-bye!
How does what happened here... play into all of that, foreshadowing, etc. So again, if you have just watched this episode, tune out at the commercial break. We'll give you plenty of time. You can check out all the great stuff at Post-Show Recaps and come back next week for episode 3 that will be coming of The Witcher Season 2. Again, both like by itself and then in total with the rest of the series. What is Lost? It's a great question. Angela, Lost is a show that I did an 8-hour finale.
Let's take a break. I got to go to the bathroom.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, check out all the other stuff we have going on in Post-Show Recaps. We gave out the stuff at the beginning. We're going to take a quick break, but you spoiler-filled whole season people, we're going to be back in just a minute to talk about this episode in retrospect. When you listen fast to all our podcasts, an impressive feat. Since our network is vast, there's actually much more behind an online door. Become a patron and enjoyment will soar. So many different perks, a Discord to lurk, get early releases, and maybe some merch. Podcast exclusively, like Extra and YA. It's butt tons of content to fill out your day. Toss a coin to Patreon, support Post-Show Recaps, support Post-Show Recaps, oh. Toss a coin to Patreon, come join our community.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
All right, even though we had an entire break, I'm going to say it one more time. If you don't want to be spoiled on the rest of The Witcher Season 2, turn back, go away from these gates.
Hut, hut.
Get out of here. Hut, hut. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Dooney!
I knew that's exactly what you were going to say as soon as we did
this. I mean, listen, literally nothing that we're going to talk about today has any reflection on that, but Dooney!
I know. That was really hard for me not to spoil, and I also am glad that I gave you the warning not to look on IMDb, because I was looking up the guy who plays the... What is it?
Jokstra, the Redanian...
The Redanian mage, and I saw that they had listed this guy as... Emhyr / Dooney, and I was like, wow, just burying the lead. Not at all.
Actually, that does tie back into one of the questions though I had about this. When Emhyr quote unquote talks to Fringilla, do you think they use that actor's voice?
I don't know, maybe. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I guess we have to compare it.
The problem is that it was mixed with the voice of the Deathless Mother.
Right.
Same with like when the young girl is talking to Yennefer.
And so let's talk about that, because I think I'm really surprised in retrospect how, I guess to use a Leshy analogy, they really planted a seed in episode.
They did.
I really did not expect Valethmir to be such a big part of season two.
Me neither, and I think that's also because like she's not a character that's in the book. So
right,
like
exactly.
But I guess it was a really good character to frame a season that was all about character development. You know, It's like instead of having Geralt go after monster and all of the stuff with, you know, it's a really good way to frame what was happening from a character growth perspective outside of the Nilfgaard elf stuff, the Kaer Morhen stuff.
Right, and I've seen some comments as well from people about how they were a little a little saddened that some of, like, the big bads of things like Nilfgaard got taken away in favor of Volothmir. But that being said, if we're going about, like, mystical thematic elements, the idea of essentially a demon that feeds off of fear and paranoia, I mean, incredibly relatable in 2021.
And I think that for us moving forward, it is important to note that this is a television show. It is not a direct correlation with the books.
It's called adaptation for a reason.
Yeah, and I think also people get their knickers in a twist, because I do think that people want that. And I mean, I'm one to say that, like, I love an adaptation that's true to the source material, but It can be true to the source material and also stray from it. We just saw West Side Story a few weeks ago, and I, you know, barely even noticed the stuff that was different because it was so well done, you know? So I think as long as it's an enjoyable ride, I don't really care.
Yeah, but it's interesting now looking at the... Yes. Desires and influence of Volothmir. When you think initially it's like, oh, okay, this one is
just a monster. This is what she does.
Well, initially you think like, oh, you know, is she going to lure them in and eat them? And then it's like, oh, okay, she's guiding them together. I wonder why. And it honestly is just, again, like, I don't know if this is 3D chess or just, hey, what's going to cause the most chaos and most misery?
Well, so yes, she needs to cause this chaos, this misery, this fear so that she gains power. But she wants to use Yennefer to get Ciri because Ciri can open a gateway for her to go home.
Yes, because we'll see again.
So it's like two-sided, you know? She's using Fringilla and Francesca to get more powerful. But for her, Yennefer is the key because Yennefer's going to bring her Ciri.
And so that's another reason why, as Fringilla asks, like, why did she not let you go? It's because she is sort of the connective tissue to get Ciri.
Because like if she had just been a monster who like ate fear, like why would she not just find somebody else to like possess and get fear from?
Yeah, and so that's another, again, big revelation. And this will tie into the Kaer Morhen side of things, is you wonder like, oh, are these monsters mutating? What's happening? No, these new versions of monsters are coming through due to monoliths falling, aka freaking portals opening to other worlds.
Yeah, so basically, and I guess we can dive right into it, because I imagine we'll continue to talk about this in the spoiler sections of other episodes, but the monoliths, it is basically revealed in season two that the idea of the conjunction of the spheres were all the worlds banged together and created one.
Man, it's like smushing a bunch
of balls together. It's Pangea, but of different universes. But that's not actually what happened. It's they merged and then split apart again.
Yeah, they like bounced off of each other.
And so during that time of convergence, things came over. And so the ability for Ciri to open these portals, these monoliths, are basically like the area of that.
Yeah.
These convergence points is like a big deal because she's the one, every time she screams, every time she has a tantrum, she lets a monster in.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's like the Deathless Mother's like wants her to let her out.
Exactly.
She's
she
like,
wants
gotta
to
go.
The portal to go back home.
Because she was trapped by the first Witchers.
Yeah.
Because she was a monster that came through.
Exactly. So it's this idea of like she's waited for years wanting to go back, wanting to amass power, and now she has started to like...
Well, and the knife that we see in the first episode, in this episode of In Kaer Morhen, is her knife.
Yes, and so that's the demon that they're talking about. And it was also, oh, in retrospect, focusing in on the knife that when she possesses Ciri that she uses to kill all the Witchers in their sleep is...
Rough.
That Ciri is essentially staring the knife that unconsciously she'll do, but essentially she'll use as her own weapon of murder.
Right, and that's because it's the Deathless Mother's knife. She knows where it
is. Yeah, that she can essentially, like, kill Witchers, and, like, unlike their, you know, typical healing factor or whatever, like, this for some reason is their kryptonite. It was just rough to,
rough
see that
to
initially
see.
Of, like, oh, because Vesemir sort of taught her that, you know, she's been able to go back and do that. And they'll certainly, I think, hopefully deal with season three about the fact that Ciri just dealt with the fact that she just murdered a bunch of people.
Yeah, we'll see.
We shall see. But
poor
yeah,
Ciri.
I mean, such a mind-blowing revelation to me that essentially, like you said, it's not like
what they set up in season one, like with the convergence of the spheres, isn't actually the truth.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like the Big Bang.
And that's why I love Istrid in this season too, because I feel like
I'm really excited to talk about Istrid.
He serves as a narrator of sorts to the mythology of the Witcher.
He really is an audience analog of like he's just looking
for
exposition.
He's like,
what's
going on? Let me go to my encyclopedia and
like,
look it up.
Oh, okay, wait, who is this like what's the Sintran line?
Yeah.
What happened here? Oh, what happened with the conjunction of the spheres?
Let me go see some people who are experts in that. Like, let me just like figure it all out for you.
So that begs the question. Obviously, this Leshy that we saw is a very different type of Leshy. Do you think this Leshy recently came over from one of Ciri's little spells?
I think so, because they're noticing more and more monsters that are mutated.
Yes,
it's
but,
because Ciri more and more is using this power.
But I would not say that it's a one-for-one. It's like, okay, I scream once and one monster
comes
over.
No, I think she screams and like many monsters can come out.
Exactly. I don't think it's like, okay.
Except for that time at the end when she screamed and then that thing came
out.
Well,
even though they had like three basilisks
out
when she broke the tree in half.
Yeah, exactly.
Did they know, by the way, in Kaer Morhen that tree had a monolith in it, you think?
No, because Vesemir looks right at it and he's like, what the fuck? Like,
I mean, yeah, I mean, it would make sense then as to why Kaer Morhen was there.
Yeah.
I would imagine that like the people who first made it were like, hey, let's protect this monolith.
Yeah, maybe.
If monsters are coming out of it, then we should be the first responders.
I don't think they've
there.
Ever known that monsters were coming out of it, though. Maybe in the past they did, but...
Yeah, but there were several moments that I think... really calls forward to specifically
this episode.
Yeah, in this episode to what happens in the finale. Like, for example, when Yen's meeting with Volothmir, there's a shot of her wrists bleeding out.
Yes.
And it's a call forward to basically what she does in the finale.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
When she decides to help get Volothmir out of Ciri by essentially, quote-unquote, taking the deal.
Yeah, but taking her into herself.
Right, exactly. And that's... So, confirm this for me, because we'll talk about it more in the finale.
Sure.
Is that how Yennefer gets her magic back? Is that she got Volothmir in her for a hot second?
I'm not sure that it's clear how she got it back. I think it's about the sacrifice that she made more than anything, and that she, like, let go, I think, is probably more accurate.
That
but...
she, like, let go of the idea of the pursuit of power and living, almost.
Yeah. Yeah, she was willing to sacrifice herself, so she was granted back access to
chaos.
I just thought
it was interesting that that image happened, considering that, like, is it a sign from Volothmir to be like, this is what you need to do if you accept the deal or something?
I don't know.
We'll talk about the orange fireflies later on. That is Volothmir.
Yeah, I think she's just fire.
But there was a really interesting part as well. Like, the Eskel stuff I found really fun because, you know, Geralt and Vesemir are both trying to, rather than kill Eskel, like, essentially trying to call the humanity out of him, right? They say, you're in there somewhere, which is essentially what Geralt tries to do with Ciri in the finale.
Yeah.
Like, trying to shake her out of her reverie of, you're in there, I know you are, like, come out of your coma, essentially.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, Eskil is, like, I don't want to say a character throughout the season, but his head is. That's what he brings to Istrid to be like, hey, this is a mutated monster.
Like, is it? I thought it was the I forgot if they used, because they're going to go hunting for the Leshy next episode, and they also find that demented Kikimora as well.
No, I think it's the Leshy.
Well, either way, I mean, Eskil is obviously like the first in a long line of things. That's the other thing as well. I did not expect like a long term mystery.
Yeah, and I like that. I like that. That's like an overarching thing, but there's also, I think the good thing, the cool thing about The Witcher is they don't. Yes, it was ended on a bit of a cliffhanger, but they don't end episodes without giving you something.
Yeah.
Like, I think every episode is like there's a tiny revelation or there's like some sort of like moving forward, whereas I think there are other shows out there like Game of Thrones or whatever where there are episodes where you're like, this is boring. Mm-hmm. Like, literally nothing happened. And it's like, that's – The Witcher's not doing that. They have 8 episodes. They're going to achieve it. You know what I mean? So I like that.
Some other fun stuff. Philivandrel is right. He tells Fringilla, like, hey, if we joined up with Nilfgaard, all we're going to do is, like, get kicked out when Nilfgaard takes over. And that's exactly
what happens.
So in this case, it's more so that...
they decide to leave.
They decide to leave because Emir essentially sent an assassin to kill their baby.
Yeah, Emir sent an assassin to kill their baby. They also don't want to fight.
Yeah.
And they've been told they need to fight, and they don't want to do that, so they're like, bye.
I'm really excited to track the arc of Francesca.
Yeah.
Because to have her go from, like, sort of hardened mage here to warm mother to just straight up, like...
bonkers.
Like, burn the world by the end of it.
Yeah, she lost her shit.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting for season 3 as well.
There was a lot of baby killing in this season.
I know. Unfortunately, The Witcher is the show where babies die.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Like, that should be
and
the...
And Roach.
Yeah, and Roach. We'll talk about that as well. So, though he looks like he has a horse, but another horse by the end of it. He took the dwarves' horse.
He took the horse.
Yeah.
Not his usual type, he said.
But I just thought that was interesting. And also, you know, the building up of Fringilla. We'll see this a couple times when it's just like... her and Francesca, and man, they have such, like, a great, you know...
Yeah, they have a gal power friendship.
They really have such a great friendship, and it's going to be... it's really fun when
it's gonna
it plays
be tested,
into...
though.
When Cahir comes in, right? Because, again, Fringilla was previously under Cahir. Now this is essentially, like, Cahir coming in and Fringilla being like, I found my voice now.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for her because Francesca sees, like... it's like when somebody has a toxic boyfriend, and they leave that toxic boyfriend, and they become, like, a whole new person. They're, you know, they're totally different. Mm-hmm. They are living their best life, and then they, you know, get back together with that toxic boyfriend, and you're like, oh, I miss the old you. Like,
yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, because I think she does still have some of these newer aspects, and I really
well,
like...
well, she forgets for a little bit, and then she refines her voice. You know, when he first arrives, she's like, she lets him tell her what to do, and then she's like...
and then there's that one moment, right, when she freezes everyone at the table and straight up murders
everyone.
She
paralyzes everyone with nightshade.
And then shoves knives into their eyeballs.
Yeah, she has, like, no fear, too. It's gross.
Well, the Fringilla arc is really interesting as well, because, honestly, this is a character we knew nothing about in season 1.
No, and they try to give us a little bit here, and they also...
and that's why I think this episode is interesting in retrospect, because it sets up, like, what does Fringilla want? And it's like, she wants to sit at the right hand of Emir.
She wants power.
Yeah.
She wants to be in charge. I get it. Boss lady.
Yeah, but it was interesting, because before, I think you just think of her as like, oh, okay, brainwashed magic lady. But no, I think she's more complicated than that. Like,
yeah.
Especially considering where she came from as well, like... how much she saw, like, she was imprisoned. I think jockeying for power is understandable, considering she never wants to be in that position again.
And the Brotherhood of Sorcerers basically, like, gaslighted everyone into believing that the only way to exist as a mage was to be a right hand of somebody who, like, ran a kingdom. You know, and she's realizing that, like, yes, but also I can do more than that. It's the same with Yennefer. I mean, she felt that she... you know, she saw through that as well.
And that's interesting, too, in that, you know, the first 2 episodes seem to really build this dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
It's done.
Yeah.
They really don't interact. I'm trying to remember. Because Fringilla just stays within the Sintran walls for the rest of the season.
Exactly.
And Yennefer never goes inside there. So I'm imagining that these characters are going to cross paths later on, especially considering we're going to start getting into next week, you know, Yennefer's dynamic with Cahir.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how those two interact, considering that I would call them almost 2 sides of the same coin.
Yeah. No, I agree.
The toss a coin, if you will. Is there anything else, like, other things from this episode?
I don't think a lot tied into this episode. I think that the big spoilery stuff we just talked about, but I think that the more we get into the series, the more spoiler stuff we'll have talk about. Yeah, because I do think it's like right now we had a little taste.
Yeah.
And now we're going to get the next taste and it all starts building up. It's the same what happened in season one where you start realizing things tie together.
And that's going to be really interesting as well, because I think I was a little surprised that they stayed in Kaer Morhen for so long in season two.
Yeah.
And Ciri is going to more and more like have this place feel like a home, which is going to make even more tragic the fact that she like
has to leave too.
And causes so much destruction here.
Yeah, and I think also the benefit of a show like The Witcher is that you can stay in some place like that but bounce around because you have portaling. You know, it's like as soon as Triss arrives and then you have Istrid and then you have all these other people that can create portals, it's like very convenient because you can be there, people can stay there, you can go back there.
Yeah, but still, I mean, I don't know if you can truly go back to a place where you killed all the witchers.
No,
like,
but you know what I mean?
Monolith.
Like, throughout the season. I'm not saying at the end they leave because they have to leave.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They have to move on.
We're going to get to talk about Nynaeki in a few episodes.
Oh, fucking love her.
Yeah, I mean, we have, like, season two just...
So many new characters.
Really brought it. Yeah,
Race,
Lydia. We're going to talk about the Redanians, of course, which just come out of freaking nowhere.
Owl bitch,
yeah, which also...
Sorry, I don't
nowhere.
Mean to be calling all these women
bitches. I know,
bitches.
How dare you? This is a very, like...
She's fine, but the Deathless Mother is total bitch.
Yeah, but then, like you mentioned, we have Rince and Lydia, who are
Rince and Rince.
Like, two out of nowhere new big bads that both become horrifically deformed.
Yeah, especially Lydia.
Yeah, we've got a lot more stuff to just,
and
like...
And they work for somebody that is not revealed in this season, which is a bummer, because now I have to hold it in.
I know, you have another year to hold it in. Yeah,
I might tell you sometime.
I was surprised, because I think that... I mean, I guess they really leaned into the...
I might spoil it for you later.
Please don't do that.
I can't hold it in.
Can you, like...
It'll eat my soul.
Can you yell it into a pillow or something?
Maybe.
Write it down on a piece of paper and put it in an envelope for me to open when I...
Yeah, there's another mastermind behind the scenes that's not Amir.
Yeah, well...
Slash Dooney.
I mean, it does make sense why they saved that for that. And, you know, Riley was talking a lot
about...
And
you see that person, too, when they're sitting at the table, you see their back.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'll have to do some back comparisons. It is interesting, though, considering that, like, Riley talked about this, we'll talk about this much more in episode 8, but, like, apparently the Amir and Dooney stuff, like, isn't until much later in the series.
It's so far along that I was like, but you can't not reveal it.
Because the thing about books is you could very easily have, like, oh, yeah, you're Amir, Dooney, you're Amir, and then it's like, oh, but he's actually Dooney. Here, there has to be a visual. This dude can't wear his helmet for the entirety of the series.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think it's a big reveal that I think they'll use more than they probably use in the book. You know, they'll probably tie a lot to Ciri. And
that's what I'm really excited about as well, is especially tracking it over, you know, when they do, like, the weird mind meld thing in a couple of episodes and, like, the flashbacks of, like, how do we view Dooney there?
Dooney!
And, like, is there anything that could have possibly played into how this happens? I'm just so...
What happened to
Pavetta? Dooney! You're a hedgehog, and now you're the white flame.
She believes they're both dead.
Yeah.
So that's, like, I think Pavetta is D.D.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Because there's also, again, that the mind meld, like, the elven
lady. Oh, yeah, like
with the green dress.
Oh, that. And then also when she sees her parents. And then later when she sees her parents again inside of the
flashpoint thing of, like, no, stay with us. Don't leave,
it's
Ciri.
It's the scene from Labyrinth where she's at the ball in the bubble.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Except in this case, like, is she both that character and Toby at the same time because she's the youngest?
Yes.
Who's the Goblin King? Is Geralt the Goblin King?
I mean, you do see a lot.
You see so much junk.
Yeah. Somebody, we were watching something recently where I was like, oh, this is, like, the Goblin King.
We were watching something recently where you said...
It
might have been. There might be a character coming up that you said it was, like, the Goblin King.
Yeah, with, like, tight pants.
Yeah.
Cod piece.
I think we'll get to it in a little bit. Either way.
It'll come.
I'm really excited because, again, like, I'll mention what I said at the beginning of this podcast. When I was watching this, I was like, okay, we stopped in Kaer Morhen, and then we'll move on to the next thing. But I was so surprised how we really went more serialized, to be frank. Serialized, if you will.
I liked it. I'm fine with it.
I think it's a much better choice, honestly.
Not better choice, but it works for this, you know?
I think that season one worked as well. You know, I'm always a fan
of,
like...
You can't do it again, though.
As serialized as things might be nowadays, it's nice to get a break of, like, oh, yeah, things are episodic. Almost like, you know, watching Star Trek The Next Generation versus Star Trek Discovery. But
yeah, everything everything's like in line, and the next episode follows up with what it did in the previous one.
I think doing, especially the way that it was presented, we can't have these larger mysteries, and especially the arcs for characters, yeah, without having it sort of flow in the way that
it does.
Well,
and I think that season two works well in this sort of cadence, whereas season one, I love the timeline thing. I know a lot of people didn't, yeah, but I think that that was like...
There'll be a reference to that coming up.
But I think that was like delightful, but you can't do it again, because yeah, it's like, you can't like... That was a surprise.
Yeah, that's why I lost.
It was my child's
surprise.
Lost had
to go into flash forward instead of
flashback. Shut up about Lost. Guys. I can't.
8 hours this week.
R.I.P. me.
On the end with Lost with Josh Wigler.
And then at the end of the day, he goes, oh, I'm so exhausted. What a tough day.
It was a tough time. We laughed. We cried. We talked about Lost.
We did talk about Lost.
It's an emotionally exhausting
As I
experience.
Rear our child.
Our own child, not surprised.
No. He was ours. We didn't promise him to somebody.
And now we should train him to fight. Take your sword. And
okay.
Do my thing. Hoo. Ha. He.
Maybe I'll take him to fencing classes. I did say the other day I wanted to do Mommy and Me karate.
Yeah, which like this
with
really
a 2-year-old
out of Geralt's series wheelhouse, right?
He is blonde and blue eyed,
yeah,
green eyed.
We just need to have him grow his hair out, and he could become a witcher yet.
Maybe later.
No, I think he's too shrill to do the Geralt like.
Well, he's two.
Yeah, I don't know what Geralt was like at two.
Probably not like he is now, because he wasn't a witcher.
Speaking of twos, that's it for episode two. Again, this season really took a turn for me, but like in very exciting ways.
Turn to the forest.
Hut, hut. Again, we'll get plenty more of Death Bitch, as she's referred to.
Death Bitch, Wood Lady.
Later on, you know, check out all the other great stuff going on in post-show recaps, as I mentioned before. The Wheel of Time is finishing up this week.
Did you keep watching The Wheel of Time?
I had to stop down because we were doing this. So we've only watched the first half of the season.
I'm so bored.
So we get that. Do not say that.
I know. I need to pick it back up. I need to pick it back up. But
that is happening. I'm also covering speaking of fantasy stuff, that's covered by R. Philly, who's also covering the Book of Boba Fett with me. We're taking over Star Wars.
The Book of Boba Fett. I like saying that.
Yeah, he's coming back on Wednesday. That came out of nowhere. Much like Boba Fett, the character. So
Disney loves to just drop shit. They're just like, hey, here's some stuff.
It's December 29th. I don't know why you just don't wait for the new year.
They can't wait.
Yeah, can't wait, possibly. Got to get their nice, like, in-between week holiday
yeah,
Boba
maybe.
Fett fix. So you can check that out, as I mentioned before, the Lost finale. The Book of Boba Fett. and, of course, the HBO lineup. I know Succession finished. I know Insecure, I think, is finishing this week as well. So plenty of content going on. And especially if you're a patron of post-show recaps, one of the benefits, if you get access to that Discord, there is a Witcher channel, which you can chat your tree-like head off about all things Witcher, both this episode and moving forward. Again, if you want to send in feedback, mike@postshowrecaps.com, or you can tweet us. And while you're moseying around on the internet, postshowrecaps.com/WitcherPod, rate and review us. You would make us incredibly happy. Happier than those
It'll witchers. Be a nice Christmas present.
Yeah, happier than those witchers were when they got special visitors.
Yeah,
and happier
true.
Than those special visitors were when they ran away from the tree monster.
Yeah, that.
So that's going to do it for this week's Witcher podcast. Again, next week, episode 3, All is Lost. We're going to be covering, again, spoiler-free and spoiler-filled. This is where we get Yennefer going to Aretuza, right? And this is where she gets to find out, essentially, like, how much is she valued when she doesn't have her magic?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, not a lot.
Not a lot.
Yeah, so this is also going to be Ciri is going to start getting into action mm-hmm. here. She's going to begin her training.
We're
going to
start all the Vilja Forts.
Oh, yeah, sort of like the internal struggle with the Brotherhood.
Trying to take over the Brotherhood.
Yeah, so...
Lots of direction.
Lots to get into, as per usual, next week. Thank you all so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks. You're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.